Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, the Janae Palmer Rice story as a lesson for anyone facing domestic violence. We will explore why even yesterday she was blaming the media rather than her husband Ray Rice for her problems, and we'll explore why women stay with their abusers and when they should leave. Also today, Tavis Smiley on topics ranging from the Bruce Levinson Atlanta Hawks racial fan base email to Smiley's new book on Martin Luther King's final year of life, to the first thing that will come up if you Google Tavis Smiley today, his upcoming role on Dancing with the Stars. And the founder of the dating site, OkCupid, today about what we do online when we think no one is looking. He's written a book about that. But first, what yesterday's New York primary results mean, if anything. Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York, joins us. Hi, Jimmy. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, always a pleasure.
So most of the media this morning is saying that Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu's showing sends a strong message to the governor. I'm not sure. If all Zephyr Teachout could get running to Cuomo's left was a third of the vote in a primary where only her supporters really had any passion or motivation to vote, and if turnout was only 10% of registered Democrats and she could hardly raise any money, do these results strengthen or weaken progressive influence in Albany?
I would argue that they would strengthen, and I would add a few factors to your analysis. First, she is running against an incumbent governor who's widely presumed to be on a track to winning a second term. So it's going to be very difficult for her or for anyone to raise the kind of funds from the typical New York donor class to put together a credible campaign. Number two, she had de minimis institutional support for her run against Governor Cuomo. And we saw that the impact of institutional support was actually significant. If you look at where the votes broke down, Cuomo's best counties in terms of a raw number of votes were the Bronx and Queens, where the Hotel Trades Council and SEIU 1199 have pretty deep roots with their memberships. And these, of course, are the unions that went heavily for Cuomo. Teachout's biggest union backers were the Public Employee Federation. It's a 54,000-member union that mostly represents the white-collar state workforce. And if you look at the areas around Albany, that's Albany, Rensselaer, Schenectady, and Saratoga counties, Teachout carried all of them. So given the disparity in institutional resources and the disparity in fundraising, I think that what's striking to me is that she still was able to draw up a third of the electorate. I think that's a strong showing, and I think that it shows dissatisfaction, particularly if you look, Brian, at some rural counties where there essentially was no organization at play. In some of these counties, Teachout was running essentially even with Cuomo or even ahead of Cuomo. What that means to me is that voters in those counties saw or heard about Zephyr Teachout either on social media, either in the print media, on television media, and they either had this idea in their head about Andrew Cuomo that they maybe didn't like him, and they sort of got themselves to the polls. I think that that is significant. I think that it shows that there is some dissent with the Cuomo in the party. It's just not organized, and not enough institutional power is behind it for it to make any overall difference. And, of course, the governor can claim credibly that an election is about 50% plus one. It always is about 50% plus one. And so getting 60% is an easy win.
Listeners, what do you think? Zephyr Teachout's 34% against Andrew Cuomo means, or anything else you want to say or ask about any of the primary results yesterday, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Jimmy Vielkind, the Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York. And it's really hysterical to me, Jimmy, when you look at which county she won and which county she lost the biggest, as you were just laying them out there, you would think that the progressive candidate would do best in New York City, the progressive bastion. But the Bronx, which I would guess has probably one of the most liberal voting records in general of any county in America, went for Cuomo because he turned out, you know, those unions, as you said, who are based there because they need him. They're dependent on him. And the more ideological progressives didn't show up. But then,
right, and the party organization was with Cuomo,
right.
And I think that Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu, they in a borough as diverse as the Bronx, Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu's message seemed to resonate best with white voters, and they didn't do significant or detailed outreach into black and Hispanic neighborhoods. I think that explains part of the governor's strong showing. He has a strong record in those neighborhoods, and he also has the people who know how to move those votes in those neighborhoods working on his behalf.
And winning Albany and the Albany area counties in general, I don't think we can call that a progressive outpouring, because really if it was the state workers voting against their tax-cutting boss, that's just a self-interest vote. That's not a progressive vote.
Well, I think that there's a good point. I think that your point there is solid. But what I see is not so much ideology. I spoke to a lot of voters, a lot of people who were supporting Teach Out, who just talked about their frustration with Cuomo. They talked about frustration on a number of levels, some of which I think emerged through this campaign to a greater extent than people outside of the political bubble had seen. Many talked about the way he approached Teach Out, first trying to knock her off the ballot, then refusing to debate her. Then with that video that came out from the Labor Day parade where he kind of turned his back on her and didn't shake her hand. And in fairness, I have to say the governor says he did not see her, though if you look at the video, that seems
a little hard to believe. And that's the metaphor for the whole campaign, treating her like she didn't exist.
Well, and also I think failing to engage. You know, several editorial boards talked about how, including editorial boards that backed Cuomo, said, in a contest of ideas, Andrew Cuomo has a lot to be proud of. Our gay and lesbian friends and family can now get married. That is because of Andrew Cuomo and his leadership. That is a strong accomplishment to tout in a Democratic primary. If you look at state spending, if you look at middle-class tax rates, my tax rate is lower. This is something that you should be touting as a Democrat in a Democratic primary. But Cuomo didn't do that. He sort of slowly engaged, and then, sensing that there was danger for his running mate, Kathy Hochul, in the face of the challenge from Tim Wu, his political apparatus started to gear up slowly in sort of the latter half of August. In the last week, we saw a final push and a final attempt to try and smother Teach Out, to try to push her margin instead of 35% or over 30% to less than 20%, which is sort of the base level for progressive gadfly candidates against Democrats statewide in New York. Again, given that effort, that last-minute push that she did, in fact, turn out at 35%, I do think is significant.
I guess where I don't entirely buy that and the going analysis is using her lack of institutional support as an excuse for why there wasn't a bigger progressive turnout. Rather than saying, look, the establishment in the Democratic Party, including Wall Street funding, real estate funding, is so strong that no institutional support that's meaningful can spring up. And so the candidate that represents that insurgency is just so unlikely to get any meaningful institutional support that that's one of the important things that we learned from this election.
Perhaps. And perhaps if you are on the progressive left, you could be crying in your soup this morning. It's certainly possible. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is how elections are run, not just in New York, but nationwide. And it's not, first you win a contest of ideas, first you win a contest of enthusiasm, and then you have to build a campaign apparatus and make it better than the other guys. Andrew Cuomo did not brush this challenge off. He may have tried to ignore and belittle his opponents through various steps, but he did not brush off this challenge. And as a result, he did mobilize those players, and they pushed him across the finish line.
And I think actually where we did see some influence on the left this year was in Teach Out's challenge to Cuomo for the Working Families Party line, not in the Democratic primary, because the Working Families Party, to your point, has developed an institution and a power base and a money base over a number of years now. So when she seemed to be a real threat to the Working Family Party nomination or for that nomination, and Cuomo really wanted that line, then he made some compromises, like saying he would stop supporting the renegade five state Senate Democrats who had formed that coalition with the Republicans, and he did stop supporting them. So maybe that's where we see the bigger influence on the left in New York state politics right now. It's not through a wing of the Democratic Party. It's through the Working Families Party.
I think that's right. And we should also note that Teachout got something like 40% of the weighted vote in the Working Families Party. And that was very close. That vote, and I was there for the party's convention that Saturday evening in suburban Albany, that really hinged on a few key figures within the party sort of signing off on this deal, sort of saying, you know, maybe I would prefer to have Zephyr Teachout as the Working Families Party candidate, but Cuomo is committing to push for a Democratic Senate. Long term, this is the best for our issues and it's the best for our party. And, you know, it was that vote, I think, was a little bit closer, and that deal came together with a little bit more up in the air than people might realize.
Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York, 212-433-WNYC on yesterday's election results. And Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to ask your guest if he thought that anywhere in the country it would be possible for a grassroots campaign to win against a candidate that has the support of the machine or, you know, big developers.
Yes, my answer is absolutely. It's just a question of the scale of the campaign, right? Of course, it's much easier for a grassroots insurgent from any side, the right, the left, to come and mount an effort when you're not dealing with as large, diverse, and complex an electorate as the state of New York, right? There are 19, 20 million people in the state. It's a very large geographic area, and so a certain amount of campaign apparatus and organizing is necessary. If you're talking about a mayoral election, say, in a small city, or if you're talking about even a congressional election, as we saw with David Bratt and Eric Cantor, it is an easier lift.
Abel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. So I'm calling from the 19th Senate District in Brooklyn, and we just reelected the incumbent state senator, John Sampson.
Or renominated, anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah. So he had been indicted twice, once for lying to the FBI about his relationship with a liquor store of some sort, and another time for on embezzlement charges. And he was accused of funneling funds to fuel a failed bid for a district attorney in Brooklyn a number of years ago. And I am just – he won with a significant portion of the vote. He won with over 50% of the vote, I believe. And I am just really disappointed with the people of my district and the people of the city for not just, you know, renominating John Sampson even after, you know, if he – I understand that he's innocent until proven guilty, but if he's going to be dividing his time between Albany and defending himself at the courthouse, then maybe he should – maybe he shouldn't have run again.
This is such an important question. And, Jimmy, what did Malcolm Smith also win his primary?
He did not. There were actually three senators who stood for renomination last night who are under active federal indictment. Tom Libous, the deputy Republican leader who represents the upstate Binghamton area, he won in a walk. He's considerably well known. The charges against him, he's kind of claimed, are politically motivated. But he's an institution in his community, and he won in a walk. Malcolm Smith lost a challenge, or he was ousted by former New York City Councilman Leroy Comrie. Comrie took that seat. He, of course, had a higher degree of name recognition from working in that district, and, of course, lots of support from people like Bill de Blasio and trying to oust Smith on exactly the lines that you're laying out, saying that how could we as a community, your district, his district, elect or put forth someone who has been charged with these crimes. With Sampson, I think it was a different dynamic in play and a very interesting one. The Brooklyn Democratic Party actually was John Sampson's biggest supporter. And his strongest challenge came from a man named Del Smitherman, an organizer from SEIU 1199. Smitherman was backed by some of these powerful institutional players. He was backed by de Blasio. He was backed by Governor Cuomo. But I think that at the end of the day, the machine moved its votes. So there are a couple of arguably perverse incentives at play here, if I can just outline them. Mm-hmm. If you're an elected official who's under indictment and you maybe at some point will consider a plea agreement, you have more leverage if you keep your seat. And so elected officials usually don't resign, even if charges against them that we could all gasp at are unveiled. They don't resign their seat because they believe that, that's an asset for them in their ongoing legal fights. And the second one is that if Senator Sampson were to be convicted of any felony charge, then he would automatically lose his seat. The way you fill a seat off election cycle is through a special election. And in a special election, it's the party bosses who pick the candidates. In a place like Central Brooklyn, like your district, the Democratic nomination, as you said, Brian, is tantamount to the election, and therefore it's in the interest of the party bosses to kind of retain that right to kind of pick their own person should something go awry. And this is where I have to make my disclaimer that all of these men have pleaded not guilty. They've said that they are innocent, and then they are, of course, innocent until proven guilty.
And another thing from yesterday relevant to corruption is, again, for me, and maybe you'll disagree, a depressing lesson from a clean government perspective, which is that few people seem to know or care about the governor's Moreland Commission scandal. Teachout's main expertise was on campaign finance-related corruption, so obviously she made that a big deal. But that was almost a coincidence because she was running anyway, and then this Moreland scandal broke. But for people who don't know, what Cuomo apparently did was to establish a commission to investigate campaign finance in the state, the root of all political evil, as many people see it, unchecked, mostly legal, big money influence. But when the commission started looking at Cuomo's own Wall Street and real estate funding base, his office stopped them from investigating that. But listen to what his running mate, Kathy Hochul, said about the scandal and whether voters care about it or not when she was on this program the day before the election on Monday.
I would say I have been talking to literally thousands and thousands of voters all over the state. You know, I was all over Queens, Brooklyn, and Bronx yesterday. And as much as the media is talking about this issue, the voters are talking to me downstate about affordable housing, passing the DREAM Act, getting minimum wage increase, and women's issues. So I just have to bring perhaps a different perspective from really the key issues are that people on the streets are talking about.
So, Jimmy, obviously all those other issues that she mentioned are vital issues to people's lives. But her message there is, people don't know, people don't care about the Moreland Commission. They're not going to vote on it. So doesn't that send a message to Cuomo and everyone else that they can pay lip service to clean campaigns, they can keep their special interest money flowing and not worry very much in Albany about a popular backlash over it?
Well, yes, and I think that most people in Albany, the governor included, have known this for years. You know, if you look at the governor's record on, you know, so-called government reform issues, every single time he's taken a deal, because I think he has calculated that people don't get it. Look at legislative redistricting, which we both know, Brian, is just so important to the electoral process. But it's just such an incredibly Byzantine thing that it's so hard to make an average voter understand what actions mean in its context and what those what the larger consequences of those actions are. So, you know, the same is true of the Moreland Commission. How do you digest what Cuomo did to the Moreland Commission, which, again, both you and I suspect a good number of your listeners know full well because they've read the published reports in the New York Times, in the New York Daily News, about the alleged interference that the governor had. You can't. It doesn't turn itself easily into an ad. I think that the closest that Teachout came to that was, I think, the day or 2 days before the primary when she was asked, what's one reason people should vote for you for governor? They say you're unqualified. She said, here's my qualification. I'm not under federal investigation. You know, that was pithy, and that was concise, and it did the job. And then the other question becomes, what power is behind your message? Teachout's campaign relied almost exclusively on free media, interviews on programs like this, articles and publications like mine and others, as well as social media to generate buzz. That's a big difference than when you're looking at someone who is paying for robocalls, paying for mail advertisements, of which Cuomo campaign aide said, I think the governor sent out 3 million mail advertisements over the course of several days. And then there's just the question of voter inattention. Right now I'm sitting here in Buffalo, where the news and the front page of the Buffalo News is dominated completely and totally by the purchase of the Buffalo Bills by Terry and Kim Pegula.
Huh.
I was watching the evening news last night, Brian. There was an hour straight of news from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock on one of the channels. Not one mention that there was an election going on.
No
Not
kidding.
One mention of a primary.
No kidding.
That's Hochul's
home area. Did she win by a lot, at least, in that home area?
She pulled, I think, about 25,000 votes out of Buffalo. Erie County delivered one of the most solid percentages for Cuomo and Hochul. I think it was more than 70 point. They drew around 70 or over 70% in this western New York area. And again, that was to be expected. Governor Cuomo and his aides know how to run an effective campaign. They know where you have to pull votes to bulk up your numbers. And they know that some of the things I talked about a few minutes ago in these small counties where perhaps you're getting a pure or measure of what a voter's ideology is, they're only good for a couple hundred, a couple dozen, or maybe a couple thousand votes. So, for example, Rensselaer County, where Teachout took, I think, 60% of the vote, that's only 2,000 votes overall. It's actually not worth much in the grand scheme.
Right. And Western New York, I mean, one way to look at this whole primary campaign season is that it was all about strengthening Cuomo in Western New York for the general election when he runs against Republican Rob Astorino, because he actually lost part of that Buffalo area to Carl Paladino, even as radical as Paladino was and fringy 4 years ago. He's trying to shore up Western New York for November, and that's, you know, why he was able to, that's why he was willing to try to sort of blow off the liberal wing of the party, take them for granted, which he proved he could do, and win in Western New York. Do you agree?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And Hochul was actually talking about this. I saw her in Rochester yesterday having a lunch campaign stop, and she said she talked about some local issues to the media, and then she immediately said, you know, if you a vote for me is a vote for ourselves up here. I will be a voice for upstate right next to Andrew Cuomo, carrying on the tradition of Bob Duffy, who was the former mayor of Rochester until he was tapped in 2010 to be Cuomo's running mate. So in the course of this interview in Rochester, none of what many people in New York City see, and or some of them are quite upset about as Ms. Hochul's ideological inconsistencies, her past support from the National Rifle Association versus her support now for Governor Cuomo's SAFE Act, her past rhetoric against undocumented immigrants versus now her support for the DREAM Act. This didn't come up. It just didn't come out. She's the hometown girl. And here in Erie County, it's also important to remember that there were several legislative primaries on the ballot, which were actually in play and which drew much more attention than arguably the top of the ticket. And so if you're a voter in the various factions here in Buffalo in the contest between State Senator Tim Kennedy and Betty Jean Grant, maybe you're on one side or the other. But then you look to the top of the ticket and you think, oh, Hochul, I know her. She's from Erie County. Oh, Cuomo, he's been here. There's the Buffalo Billion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that higher than that those down ballot races, which served to drive up turnout in this region, of course, benefited the top of the ticket, and it benefited Cuomo Hochul in an enormous way.
I want to get one more New York City related angle on here, and it's from Gloria in Brooklyn. Gloria, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes. Good morning. About the turnout and the Cuomo supporters. There were reports by Fred Dicker. There was a report from Fred Dicker in the New York Post citing anonymous Democratic Party insiders who said that they were pressured not to support Teachout. They were threatened with cut off of funds to their local districts that had projects like senior centers, et cetera. They were pressured by de Blasio, by Melissa Mark-Viverito, and by Joe Percoco from Cuomo's camp and from Cuomo himself.
So, Jimmy, can you confirm that? I didn't see that New York Post story, so I don't even know if the caller is quoting it accurately. Do you know it, and can you confirm it?
That is what the Post and its state editor, Fred Dicker, reported on Monday. I can't speak to any explicit quid pro quo. If you don't support me, I won't support your project, et cetera. But we do know that Cuomo worked the phones. Last week, his campaign released, I think, a 6,500-word press release touting endorsements from all around the state of New York. One of them was Stephanie Miner, who until recently, the mayor of Syracuse, who until recently was a pretty consistent Cuomo critic for his policies toward upstate cities. She feels they've been given short shrift. The governor says he's done enough. He's given pension. He's eased pension costs to the cities, et cetera. But Miner then went out publicly and said, yeah, he called me. He called me personally. We had a long chat. We had it out, and I'm happy to give him my endorsement.
So why?
They're certainly reaching out to get their ducks in a row.
Yeah, why? And the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, who is this progressive icon for the liberal wing of the Democratic Party nationally, he didn't support the progressive challenger. What do you make of the de Blasio factor? We have 30 seconds.
Well, I think Mayor de Blasio knows that he is, at the end of the day, the leader of a political subdivision of the state of New York. He knows, or he suspects, as many suspect, that Governor Cuomo is going to be reelected. And frankly, Mayor de Blasio needs Governor Cuomo's approval and needs the state's approval for many items on his agenda.
To get so much done. And one that's been in the press today is that he may now get Cuomo support for the state to give up control over New York City's rent laws and let the city take back that, so that there aren't future battles in Albany like there have been so many of in the past, where upstate conservatives can determine how much we can regulate the rents in New York City. Do you see that as a top agenda item for next year now?
I see that as an agenda item. I see the idea of municipal ID cards as an agenda item. I see lots of agenda items. And I think that if there is someone who emerges having himself shored up during this primary cycle, especially on the state level, it's Mayor de Blasio.
Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York, with the meaning of yesterday's New York primary results. Jimmy, thanks so much.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the Janae Palmer Rice story as a lesson for anyone facing domestic violence. Stay with us.